You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart sitting in today for Leonard LoPage. Despite longstanding efforts to end it, hunger remains a major problem in America. According to the nonprofit advocacy group Why Hunger, 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger or the risk of hunger, and about a third of those people are children. Recent efforts to fight hunger and malnutrition have also focused on ways to get the poor to eat healthier foods. Joining me now to discuss these issues is the co-founder and executive director of Why Hunger, Bill Ayers. He also hosts a weekly radio show on WPLJ. And Lynn Pentecost is co-founder and executive director of the Lower East Side Girls Club, which runs educational and other social service programs for low-income girls and families in Manhattan. Lynn, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the word hunger has been replaced in some circles by the phrase food insecurity. I know what that means. Tell the listeners what that means.
Well, it's a euphemism, actually. And what it means is that people are not starving in the way they might be someplace else in the world. But in fact, most people in that category don't know where the next meal is coming from, necessarily. Mm-hmm. Or it may be that they're cutting meals so that somebody else in their family can eat. Or they're buying food that isn't so healthy, but it is cheap. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it very consciously so that they can make it through the month. So this whole question of food insecurity, it's a term that was thrown in some years ago, but it really is something that kind of veils what hunger really is about. And what hunger is about in this country, my partner Harry Chapin and I always used to say, is kind of an obscenity, kind of the ultimate obscenity in this country that has so much money and so much wealth that we should have people who are hungry at all. And we have a combination now, as you're pointing out, of people who are hungry, but also people who are malnourished. They may be getting enough calories, but they're not getting the proper kind of calories.
And can we talk about that? There was a story in the New York Times, I have it in front of me, March 12th, the obesity hunger paradox. And this rang true for me because when I was a reporter at Bloomberg News, I pitched this idea of doing a story on food insecurity in China, because you had people who looked healthy and fine because they were getting fatter and fatter, or they were obese. And my pitch was, the person who is obese is as malnourished as the person we have come to recognize as someone who's starving, the poor child in, say, Ethiopia with the distended belly. Lynn, if you can, you know, talk about that, how obesity and that the poor child in Ethiopia with the distended belly, how they're suffering from the same thing.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just saying to Bill that the girls who come, and we work with over 300 teenage girls a week, which is thousands a year. The girls who come to the Lower East Side Girls Club are not coming in hungry, but they're coming in nutrient deficient. And we see that in all kinds of ways. Besides obesity, they come in and they just have no energy. I mean, what is a teenage girl at 3 o'clock having no energy about? It's because she's put no supportive calories into her body, which doesn't mean that her stomach's rumbling. And I think that's where we connect with the starving in other countries who are also, they're nutrient deficient and calorie deficient for a different reason. Mm-hmm. In our country and in our city, it's really all about how fast food has become the average and ordinary meal.
Mm-hmm. So the combination of fast food and inactivity, you know, kids playing video games and not getting out there and exercising like I had to when I was a kid. So let's talk more broadly. Why is hunger still so prevalent in America today?
Well, the major reason is that people aren't making enough money. I mean, that's the bottom line reason. In New York State, there was just a study released that 27.5% of all the people that are poor are actually working. So you've got the working poor, and then you've got a recession, a great recession, in which unemployment is enormously high. And then you have underemployment, people who are working, but they're only working part-time. And then you have people who are long-term unemployed, which means they're unemployed for 6 months or more. And a third of all of the people who are unemployed right now are long-term unemployed. So you've got two things going at the same time. One is there just isn't enough employment. And two, the jobs in this country have gradually receded into being low-wage jobs. So we've got a tremendous number of low-wage jobs in our society. And somehow or another, we've made a decision, I guess. I guess it's a decision, but it's a very bad decision that says that there are certain kinds of jobs that can be low-wage, and that's okay. For example, people who work in daycare centers and folks who work in nursing homes and folks who are nursing assistants and people who come and help people in their homes. So all the people who take care of the people that we love the most are little kids and our parents and our grandparents and often us when we're sick. We somehow or another as a society say, well, it's okay if they're low paid. And that's wrong. That's absolutely morally wrong. And these are not jobs that would be outsourced to some other country. These are jobs that are here. But somehow or another, we've made a decision as a society that it's okay for those jobs to be poverty wage jobs.
And Lynn, you wanted to jump in on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, that just goes to what I was saying about our girls is when you have a limited pocketbook, you know, only so many coins in the coin purse, you're going to buy the cheapest product out there. And I was just reading in the Times today, somebody had said something about how peaches and pears are so expensive, of course we can't buy them. And we have to step back a minute and a step and ask ourselves, why are peaches and pears and fruits and vegetables so much more expensive than junk food, fast food, packaged food? And, you know, it goes back to the agricultural subsidies in our country, too. It's not only about low wages. It's about where our government decides it's putting its subsidy money.
Well, for example, the farmers in the Northeast get 1% of all the subsidies. If you think about that. And the subsidies go to things like corn, especially corn, mm-hmm. but also rice and, soybeans, that kind of thing. So what's happened then is that corn is grown in abundance, and it's in everything that you can possibly imagine.
High fructose corn syrup.
Oh, God, yeah, everything. Yep. So that's being subsidized, and so therefore it's cheaper. And the farmers aren't getting any subsidies for the fresh fruits and vegetables, so they tend to be higher. I mean, that's one very basic reason.
I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate here speaking with Bill Ayers and Lynn Pentecost about the hunger-obesity paradox, you know, largely speaking. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. So you mentioned, you know, the person coming in and saying, peaches and pears are so expensive, you know, why should I buy them? And, you know, we have this effort coming out of the White House, a very valiant, noble effort to get people to eat more healthy foods, to go to farmers markets and to eat fresh foods. But this stuff's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So, I stumped Lynn.
Yes, you're right. It isn't cheap.
It isn't cheap until you compare it against future health care costs. I mean, you know, and then it all equals out because.
So how do you? Yeah. So the girls who come into your organization, how do you convince them that, you know, a peach or a pear or an apple is it might be a little more expensive, but in the long run, it's a healthier, more beneficial choice than, say, the bag of Fritos or the fries from McDonald's, which are unbelievably good.
I know. You know, it's not about, for us, it's really simply acknowledging the fact that for teenagers in particular, which is the age group we work with primarily, they're into experiential education. And so what we've done is created what we call a no junk food zone. So when you come to the Girls Club, you might as well see it plastered on the front door. But if you walk in with a bag of chips in your hand and a soda in the other hand, we politely say, excuse me, but would you mind taking that back outside and finishing it off there? Because when you do walk in the door, we offer an alternative. We offer fruit platters, hummus and crudités. Mm-hmm. We have never found a day ending with any food left over, and we only serve healthy foods. So
I can attest to that. I've been down there. It's really good.
I found it curious you don't take the potato chips away. You tell them to go outside and finish them.
You meet
them where they are.
Well, exactly.
It's a step along the road.
Right.
We're working in two places in the country. We're a national organization, mm-hmm. so we're working in the Mississippi Delta, and we're also working in southern Arizona around Tucson. in a desert area with lots of Native American folks. And what we're doing there is working on the problem of food deserts.
Mm-hmm.
Food deserts are all over the country, and what that means, it's an area, a geographic area, could be rural, could be in the city. One of the biggest ones is right in the Bronx, right here. And it means that there's very little accessibility to fresh fruits and vegetables and other good food. There's a convenience store, you know, there's a drive-in, you know, gas station maybe. There's mm-hmm. a whole lot of fast food restaurants, and that's about it. And in some of the rural areas, it becomes even worse because there's food being grown, there's crops being grown, but they're not accessible to people. So we're in the Mississippi Delta now, working with folks who are trying to create community gardens, farmers markets, better food in the schools. So there's lots of things happening around the country, very, very exciting movements mm-hmm. of people who are trying to get people to have access to better food and also more money so that they can buy that better food.
Are there government, major government programs to help those folks?
Well, the Farmers Market Program, the WIC Farmers Market Program, the Senior Farmers Market Program, they're not big enough as far as I'm concerned, but they're very effective on a certain level. We need to grow those programs. It simply means that if you're a senior and you get a coupon, you can go into the farmers market and you know, purchase some food for free. And then there are other things that are being done for, let's say, folks who have the SNAP card. SNAP is now Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program has taken the place of food stamps. There are no food stamps. It's a much better system. It's an EBT card. People swipe it. It takes away the shame and all of that. So it's working well. So now what they've done, and New York City is a real leader in this because of Bob Lewis, the kind of king of farmers markets. And they've gotten the EBT machines for the farmers to be able to take those cards and swipe them. And then we also have something called health bucks, so that if you go in, you can get the health bucks and you get more for your dollar. So these are some of the things the government is trying to do to get people to eat better. But when you're 90 miles or 30 miles or 40 miles, whatever it is, from any kind of good food, you're stuck. It's a real problem in rural areas as well as in urban areas.
I'm speaking with Bill Ayers of Why Hunger and Lynn Pentecost, co-founder and executive director of the Lower East Side Girls Club. We're talking about the hunger-obesity paradox, and we're going to keep talking about this in a moment. Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate. Before I get back to our guests, I have to tell you that coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about orphan films, and we've got Tim Gunn coming in, and we also have Raquel Welch, who I personally cannot wait to see. But in the meantime, we have Bill Ayers and Lynn Pentecost, and we're talking about hunger in America. And before we went to break, Bill, you were talking about the SNAP cards and mm-hmm. things that are being done to get poor people to make healthier choices. And I just want to, if we could talk more about what the government is doing to combat hunger
yes.
In the United States, and particularly here in New York.
Well, one of the things is the SNAP program, which used to be called food stamps, as we mentioned before. There are more people on SNAP now than ever before, and that's because we have this terrible high unemployment, obviously. The other thing is that we've changed the attitude of the government and of a lot of people towards SNAP. It used to be seen as a welfare program, and it really is seen now as a supplement, a wage supplement, and a nutrition supplement program. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So now people don't have the same shame that they had in the past, and they're going to get on to SNAP. Still, however, in New York City, we have more than a third of the people who are eligible who aren't getting any benefits. And that's really a shame. We're leaving about two-thirds of $1 billion on the table.
But that's because people aren't signing up, or the government's not making an effort to get people signed up?
Each of the above. The system in New York has been antiquated and also very negative. Mayor Giuliani hated food stamps, and he did everything he could to keep people off food stamps. This mayor doesn't have the same antipathy mm-hmm. towards it, but he hasn't really embraced it either, and he still has this finger imaging thing that you have to have your fingerprints taken. That's only in four places in the country. That's all. And it doesn't really save any money. It doesn't protect. It doesn't do anything except discourage people from coming in. The other thing is that it's very difficult when you've got to go to three or four or five different offices to sign up for different benefits. So we've worked with a team of people around the country to create something called the Benefit Bank. And it's being used in Ohio big time. And over the past 2 years, it's brought $200 million into the pockets of poor people. And what it simply is a set of software that you have in a computer. And I walk into your office in a nonprofit organization in Ohio or lots of other places in the country. And within 20 minutes, you can tell me what benefits I'm eligible for and get me signed up for all of those benefits. Mm-hmm. So I'm not taking off days from work and losing money. I'm not being shunted from one office to another and being told to come back later. In one 20-minute period, I can get eligible for all of the benefits, and they push a button, and it's electronically done. So now I'm getting SNAP. I'm getting child care for my child health care. I'm possibly getting child care as well. I'm mm-hmm. getting earned income tax credit. This should be in New York. We should have this in New York as well.
But speaking about the Obama administration, I mean, do you think that it's taken new action on hunger?
Yes. I mean,
to fight hunger?
He has a whole campaign to end childhood hunger by the year 2015, and that's good. The president has tried to put, I say tried, because he's wanted to put $1 billion a year more into child nutrition programs as part of the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the senator who is in charge of that committee in the Senate, the Agriculture Committee, has cut it in half. Why she did this remains to be seen. There's a lot of reasons why she did it, but they're not good reasons. So right off the bat, she's cut his legs out from under him, in a sense. And this is a Democrat who is proposing to put only half of the money into child nutrition that the president wants. Mm-hmm. There's something drastically wrong with that. And we're trying to fight it to make sure that more of that money can go into school, school lunch, that kind of thing.
Right. Could it be that the large food companies are playing a role in that?
Well, and also
lobbying?
Also the large farmers down in Arkansas, because mm-hmm. some of the money could come from the kinds of subsidies that they're getting, and they'd like to reduce some of those subsidies and put them into feeding children. And mm-hmm. somehow or another, that's not seen as a good idea by the folks who run the big farms.
So then let's talk about the role of the big food companies. I mean, we've talked about agriculture, but what role do they play, the large food companies, in the hunger, in the hunger issue?
I kind of want to say no comment.
Well, I can say they play a very big role. They play a very big role. They're very powerful, and they manage to get their products subsidized, as we were talking before, and they also manage to get some of their unhealthy products into schools and prominently displayed every place that you can possibly imagine.
So you don't think – so, I mean, Pepsi has made a big show lately of pulling their sodas and pulling their unhealthy beverages out of the schools and other things.
Good.
Do you think that that's, from a place of altruism or they just want to get the government off their back?
Well, it's a smart thing to do. Because there are moves afoot in our society to try to get those things out of school. So if you do it voluntarily and you can work out some kind of deals, it's better for you. One of the things that's happened that's very exciting in this country right now is that there is a merger between the traditional anti-hunger advocates like myself, the emergency food providers, and also the good food movement. The folks who are working to try to improve the quality of food. Most of them are sort of upper middle class folks, but now it's gotten down to other folks. And it's a very powerful force if we can bring it together and everybody work together. And you're doing that on a local level then.
Yeah, I think the Girls Club is a really good example of that. And you mentioned the fabulous Bob Lewis, who works for the New York State Department of Agriculture and right. was one of the founders of the green market system. And about 10 years ago, he came to me and he said, Lynn, what are you going to do about the fact that you can't get a good apple on Avenue C or Avenue D? And I was like, Bob. And believe it or not, we 8 years ago got a grant from the USDA Community Food Program. and managed to open a farmer's market. We've been running it summers for eight years with teenage girls on Avenue D and Avenue C. And so, you know, for me, when you see a show like Jamie Oliver's where he pulls off a piece of cloth and the kids can't identify what's a celery stick versus what's a beet, I have girls selling them on the streets, and they've tasted them. They know how to cook with them, and they're really promoting them. And so it happens on a, you know, block by block level, but change is coming.
You know, Jonathan, that's happening all over the country. That's the exciting thing. You know, there's a whole movement of getting kids into the food system, and paying them to run these farmers markets, taking them to farms so that they can see that this stuff actually doesn't come out of a can, you know, but it comes out of the ground or on a tree or something.
What, cranberries don't come you know, shaped like a cylinder?
It's true. So there's a whole education process that's happening with kids. And a lot of people say, well, you know, the kids don't want to do this. But give them a chance, and they do.
But I have to ask, you know, so you have the girls, they come in, they're eating healthily, they're eating the crudité, they're selling fruits and vegetables. But how do you sustain that? That's great when they're in the building, but once they leave the building, how do you empower them to continue making those healthy choices when they leave you?
You know, we found that teens are on a mission. So it's just a matter of pointing them in the right direction and having them adopt that as their mission. And quite frankly, we do it in multiple ways. I mean, once our girls saw Food Inc. last summer, oh, my God, you know, major change. Yeah. They're thinking different about Chicken McNuggets nowadays. And so, you know, it happens over time, just the way those of us who were brought up in the era of our mother's cooked dinner learned over time how to cook. So it's but teens are good, and they get it. Nobody wants to put poison into their body once they understand what a poison looks like.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is the schools. New York City is doing a rather good job of introducing better food to kids and lots of nutrition programs. You know, they've banned trans fats, they have salad bars in lots of places, and now one of the best things the mayor has done is a free breakfast program. And one of the things we're pushing is breakfast in the classroom. Instead of having to come early, go to the cafeteria, then go to the classroom, they have these meals now that kids can eat very quickly, and they dispose of the waste right there in the classroom. And then they go to, you know, this is during the homeroom period, and they go to class, and they've eaten. You have a great story about a kid.
But before you get to that story, I just want to remind people, Jonathan Capehart in for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with Bill Ayers and Lynn Pentecost, who's about to say something, answering Bill. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Okay, Lynn.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what story Bill is talking about, but I'm dying to tell you this story. We have had for a number of years a grant that enables us to go into schools to teach entrepreneurial training and small business skills. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was combined it with our own desire to change the nutritional habits of kids, and we started teaching an eighth period class, an end-of-day class in the high schools, in which we teach the small business skills, but we'd also have the class start a business, and we started smoothie and muffin bars in high schools. Eighth period bell would ring, we'd turn that classroom into a cafe, and I would have, and this was an eye-opener for me, and we're talking 5-10 years ago, teenage boys and girls lining up to come into the cafe to buy a blended fruit and a whole grain muffin, as opposed to going down to the street for pizza and Coke. They had the $2, but they chose to spend it on the better.
I was going to ask, when you said, I mean, smoothies and muffins, I mean, that runs the range. I'm thinking of really fatty things. In fact, I left my blueberry muffin up in my bag. whole grain muffins.
Are we making you hungry right now? We hope we are.
No, but I do have my granola bar here. Blood sugar level goes low. You know, you said something earlier, Bill, that I found interesting. You said Mayor Giuliani hated food stamps, and that Mayor Bloomberg is sort of agnostic on the whole thing.
He's done some good things. You know, some good things, yeah. But there could be a lot more done because we're leaving money on the table. And when you bring SNAP money into a city, it has a multiplier effect. So what it does is it helps small businesses. It helps to create jobs. It does all kinds of things to help the economy to grow while it's feeding the hungriest people. Mm-hmm. And the people that aren't getting into SNAP in enough numbers are working poor people, Hispanics, and also seniors. Those are the three target areas that we have to try to increase participation. And we have increased participation, but there's still an enormous number of people out there who should be getting benefits, and they're not.
You know, when you talked about, you know, the banning of trans fats and things like that, there are lots of other people who call that, you know, the nanny state. You know, government coming in and telling people how they should behave, how they should eat. What's your pushback on that? Why shouldn't someone feel like government is trying to control their lives in that way?
Yeah, I'm sure there are people who do feel that. But for the most part, I think people have received it very, very well. And in the case of having salads and all that kind of thing, well, that's an option. Nobody's telling the kid he's got to eat the salad, but they're giving kids an option. Most of these things are presented as an option. And kids are given an opportunity to taste good food that they've never tasted before, perhaps, or hardly ever, but in a context where it can be tasty. And all of a sudden, there's a change that happens. What Lynn's talking about with her girls is absolutely true of kids across the board. But if kids don't have the opportunity, it doesn't happen. So that they're presenting the opportunity, the options for people to eat better.
One of the reasons why they don't have an option is because we're talking about poor kids. There's such a lack of supermarkets or bodegas with fresh fruits and vegetables in their neighborhood. So, are they not profitable? Why aren't they there?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. There hasn't been a level of profit. So one of the things the city is doing, that's a very good thing, is they have these push carts that are going around areas of the city where there are almost no markets, and people are going out. You see the push carts that are around. Well, these are targeted specifically to poor areas, and they're subsidized. So people are having an opportunity to get fresh fruits and vegetables. That's one thing. There's also the healthy bodega movement, which the city is doing with its health department, of trying to get more of a variety into bodegas. And then one of the other things that we're working on is community gardens and also community-supported agriculture, which is an amazing, amazing program that started in Japan, came here. There are tens of thousands of these now all over the country. And the whole notion is a whole bunch of people come together and they purchase beforehand a part of the farmer's product, and the farmer delivers it to them. And it's a great program. Lots of people are doing it. And now it's spreading to lower-income people who are getting subsidized to be able to have the same benefit that, that richer people can have.
Now, when you say poor people being subsidized, a caller wanted to know if farmers markets or maybe these push carts, do they accept food stamps?
Well,
The SNAP card.
The SNAP card, yeah. Yeah, the farmers markets are doing it. That was what I was saying before, that we've worked very hard, and especially this fellow Bob Lewis, who was really the guy who brought all this stuff to us. They've worked very hard to make sure that the farmers have the portable EBT machine. So if you and I go in with our credit card or somebody else goes in with a SNAP card, they can be accepted. So it's good for business for the farmer, because in the past, you and I would have had to come with cash. You know, if you walk around and you get $20 worth of stuff and you look in your pocket, you have $10, well, you got to put it back. Now you don't have to do that anymore because you can use your credit card. And a person who's got the SNAP card, they can put that on and they're getting very nutritious food as opposed to something that they would get in the local fast food.
So, Lynn, because we've got about 3 minutes left. So, let's say I was a young teenage girl, and I come into your,
We let boys into.
Oh, okay. So I walk in. What would I see this afternoon? I'm brand new. I've never been in the club before, and maybe I've got a bag of chips, or actually probably a box of powdered donuts. What do you do once you see me walk in?
With that bag of chips, well, probably I'll point to a girl who's been in the program longer and say, could you go tell that person that's not allowed in here, but to have them come back. And we have a cafe counter set in. The first thing you see when you walk in is a cafe set up, little tables, chairs. You have to walk through a cafe to get into our program area, our digital labs and things. And so the first thing you do is you see trays of fruits, vegetables, hummus, pita, and it's all a help yourself operation.
But do you have anyone? If you tell the girl to come over and talk to me and say, you know, get out of here with that, or you know, you can't have that in there. I mean, are they empowered to say, hey, you know, there's an alternative to this. I mean, wow, if you like powdered donuts, you're going to love this hummus over here.
Well, believe it or not, we own and operate a bakery also, and we make a granola bar. I'm going to get you one.
Really good stuff.
Right? Yeah. So.
And so you've got all these things there, but I'm still going to leave that building. So, still with my powdered donuts, but would I be able to walk out of that building with a city brochure or a brochure from Michelle Obama saying, you know, hey, fruits and vegetables are great. You should eat more of them, and here's where you can go to find them. Anything like that?
Not really, but you could walk out of that building with a job in one of our many job training programs. Mm-hmm. We also own and operate a cafe at the Bowery Poetry Club, and we have a booth in Essex Market. So in a sense, we can give you a job to promote that kind of changes.
Let me mention one more thing
very quickly.
We run the only national hunger hotline in America. We take calls from all over the country, connect people with emergency food and all the government programs. And people ought to call us 1-866-5-HUNGRY, okay? And
say the number again.
1-866-5-HUNGRY. It's the National Hunger Hotline. If you know anybody who's hungry, have them call us. We'll connect them to emergency food and all of the government feeding programs.
No matter where they are in the country.
No matter where they are in the country, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with Bill Ayers, a co-founder of Why Hunger, and Lynn Pentecost, the executive director and founder of the Lower East Side Girls Club, which also admits boys.
Yes.
About the hunger crisis in America, the hunger obesity paradox. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.